we break away for CBS News on the hour, then the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Rapidly approaching the 10 o'clock hour at KOIN in Portland, the news is next.
CBS News, top Republican leaders meet again Wednesday morning to discuss Mr. Nixon's current impeachment situation. I'm Jim Kilpatrick, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Senate Republican leaders, including Senators Barry Goldwater of Arizona and Jacob Javits of New York, are reportedly considering sending a GOP delegation to the White House. The Republican leadership will discuss again Wednesday the desirability and means of conveying to the president the views of the Republican senators. Apparently, the senators will attempt to decide just how strong that message should be. The New York Times quotes conservative Republican senator and former National Party chairman Robert Dole of Kansas as saying Mr. Nixon now has no more than 20 votes in the Senate. Dole indicated that before the latest disclosure from the White House, the president might have had 40 votes, but now no more than 20. Mr. Nixon needs 34 votes in the Senate to avoid conviction and removal from office. Almost all of the Republican members of the House of Representatives now say President Nixon should resign or that the House should hurry up and impeach him or both. One measure of the president's fall is the 10 Judiciary Committee members who voted against articles of impeachment. One by one, all 10 now say they will vote for the article charging obstruction of justice over Watergate. Two members of the House publicly say they still support Mr. Nixon. Republican Representative Earl Landgreave of Indiana says, I'm sticking by my president, even if he and I have to be taken out of this building and shot. Democratic Representative Otto Passman of Louisiana says only that to err is human, to forgive is divine. After meeting with Democratic and Republican leaders, House Speaker Carl Albert refused to move up the start of the impeachment debate, now set for August 19th, but Albert did say it would be shortened, perhaps to 4 or 5 days, instead of 2 weeks. CBS News continues after this.
I'm Ron Swoboda for CBS Radio. You can hear me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday now on Worldwide Sports. I alternate with colleague Pat Summerall, who's here every Tuesday and Thursday. On every broadcast, along with the latest scores, we try to bring you interviews with top figures in the world of sports and then give you a good idea of what's coming up. Join Pat and me, won't you, for complete national and international sports coverage on Worldwide Sports every Monday through Friday over the CBS Radio Network.
May I help you, miss?
Yes, I'm looking for something for the man in my life.
I see. Tell me, does the man in your life smoke cigarettes?
Well, yes, he certainly does.
In that case, why don't you give him a little advice?
Advice?
Tell him to quit.
Give that advice to the man in your life, and the life in your man will last longer. Kick the habit. Join the unhooked generation. This reminder from your lung association is a matter of life and breath.
President Nixon told members of his cabinet that he would not resign. Deputy Press Secretary Gerald Warren says, however, the issue of resignation was discussed last weekend at Camp David when Mr. Nixon met with his advisors. If Mr. Nixon is convicted in the Senate, he would receive no pension and could be forced to face civil and criminal charges in the courts. If he resigns, he would receive $60,000 a year pension for life, plus up to $96,000 a year in allowances for staff salaries and office expenses, plus free office space. The stock market fluctuated Tuesday with the news of President Nixon's future. Market analysts say the market opened sharply higher because investors were anticipating the president's imminent resignation. During the first hour of trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up more than 25 points. But when word reached the trading floor that President Nixon would not resign, there was heavy selling. And instead of up 25 points, the Dow Jones Industrial closed at just above 13 points. Analysts say a key factor is a sense of uncertainty over the prospects for government action on the economy. More CBS News after this.
Time Magazine, what's in it for you this week? Cover story, a portrait of Jack Nicholson, the movie star with a killer smile. The past master of the Hollywood sun, the actor who scratched and clawed his way to the top. Time tells you the Nicholson story. From $30 a week mail clerk to the man Mike Nichols says will become one of the great film stars of all time. The Nation, how the odds on President Nixon's survival in office are shortening. Visits with voters in the home districts of the 6 Republicans and the Alabama Democrat who voted for impeachment. A study of the loneliness of Richard Nixon in a world that has shrunk almost to himself. The World, the end of the last empire as Portugal prepares to leave Africa.
These are just some of the major stories in Time.
Reports that help you view the whole world's week.
Where Time takes you to Ankara,
Athens,
Nicosia, as the tragedy in Cyprus continues.
To the American Midwest, where the worst drought since 1934 is raising the specter of economic disaster.
To European playgrounds, where, with tourism way off, the cry now is,
Yankee, come back.
It's all in Time this week.
Kick up a copy today.
Where Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
For the first time in 2 weeks, Israeli warplanes carried out an early morning airstrike against what were described as Palestinian guerrilla targets in southern Lebanon. The Israeli military command believes several thousand Arab guerrillas are concentrated in that area. Tel Aviv says all aircraft returned safely to the base. Senator Thomas Eagleton easily won renomination to the Senate in Tuesday's Democratic primary in Missouri. Eagleton stepped aside as a vice presidential candidate 2 years ago. Said Eagleton Tuesday night, I have no national ambitions whatsoever, whether to seek higher office or to be asked to seek higher office. I'm Jim Kilpatrick, CBS News.
A whopping one-third of the world's energy use. That's how much Americans have been accounting for every year. And we only have 6% of the world's people. This is Jerry Kay for the Sierra Club. Since energy has been cheap and plentiful, we have wasted a staggering amount. But if we just cut out most of that waste, we could save several million barrels of oil every day. Energy conservation is necessary for our economic well-being now, and it is essential to our environmental health from now on. Because our most essential, life-giving natural resources, our air and our lands and our waters, suffer from the careless exploitation of our energy fuels. With careful planning, new and cleaner sources of energy will become available in time. New and more efficient methods of putting that energy to work are on the way. But for now, there is no alternative to energy conservation. It can work. It can work wonders. A message from the Sierra Club.
G. Marshall. Welcome to the wonders of your own imagination. For although I am about to tell you a horror story, it is really your imagination that will bring it to life for you. I shouldn't even say I will tell it, for it's really the story of Edward Somerset, as recounted in his private journal dated London, 1874. A truly harrowing account of what took place at Moorland Manor.
There'll be no need for me to enter the crypt, I trust.
I don't believe so. Edward?
No. The will merely states that the coffin was to be left open for a week and food and water left nearby.
The master was always afraid of being buried alive. Deathly afraid.
As many are. It's an all too common occurrence in these times. But no, you needn't enter the crypt, Hobbs. Miss Trezillian must do that, and I must accompany her. The will demands it.
Our mystery drama, The Headstrong Corpse, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by George Lober and stars Suzanne Grossman and Gordon Gould. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division, and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
You've been hearing some pretty lavish claims recently about miles per gallon. We'd like you to consider something equally important, and that's range. Range is the miles per gallon multiplied by the number of gallons your car's tank holds. Range is what makes the Buick Apollo such a special small car. It comes from coupling the Apollo's economical six-cylinder engine with a standard 21-gallon tank. It holds a lot, but it doesn't use a lot. Look into the Apollo. It's the Buick of small cars.
Spruce and maple trees give us the violin. And if we don't stop burning them down, we'll have a little less music. We'll also have a little less lumber, A little less paper, a little less rayon, a little less alcohol, a little less maple syrup, a little less printing ink, a little less turpentine.
A public service.
Charcoal.
On behalf of the Forest Service, State Foresters, and the Ad Council.
The Veterans Administration helps people in little ways.
A veteran, let's say, is trying to get an appointment. He's filed to go to school under the GI Bill. He's not getting any money, but he's entitled. Well, what's wrong with writing a letter saying that under the law, this man is entitled to receive $220 a month for attending school on a full-time basis? Believe it or not, he can take that letter with the little job, take it to the real estate people, and because he has an additional income of $220, although he isn't receiving it, it makes his chances of getting that apartment much better. And this is what I mean about the little things. Going beyond the duty every once in a while. Just go a little bit out of your way to help someone. That's my philosophy. To me, these are little things. But big things to that person. They're a big thing to that person.
At VA, we try a little harder to help.
As you may know, it's a custom of mine, a hobby, if you will, to read old diaries and journals, the accounts of lives written down by people long since dead and in their graves. Recently, I had the good fortune to come across the journal of a certain Edward Somerset, a young London lawyer, barrister, the English would say, who tells a grisly tale of what took place at Moorland Manor in the year 1874. According to Edward Somerset, let him tell the story in his own words, just as he recorded it in his journal.
And so, this being the appointed day, I took the coach to the village of Burley, 20 miles south of London in Kent, and in spite of the storminess of the weather, made the trip in less than 4 hours. I found Margaret Resilian, the girl I loved devotedly, but who, alas, shall never be mine, in a terrible state of nerves.
Edward, Edward, how glad I am to see you.
And I you, my darling, though I feared you'd not welcome the sight of me.
Oh, darling, if only I'd never consented to marry Richard Westmore. Never given my promise.
You have no choice.
Is there no escape, no way out?
Only if Dr. Westmore releases you from your promise, rescinds the marriage contract you and your father signed.
He'll never release me. In fact, he's coming for the weekend. He'll be here this evening to set the date for our marriage.
Perhaps if I were to have a talk with him.
Now,
what's all that?
Hobbs and Mrs. Murchison having another of their
quarrels. Mr. Hobbs, is that?
Oh, no, it isn't, Mrs. Murchison, by no means.
Oh, we'll see, Mr. Hobbs, we'll see. Miss,
what is it now, Mrs. Murchison? Since we buried my father a week ago, you and Hobbs have quarreled without let-up. What is it this time?
It's him and his lofty heirs, that's what it is. Sir Simon was hardly cold in his coffin before Hobbs began lording it over me and the other servants. Now your father is dead, he seems to feel he's in charge.
I am. That's the way Sir Simon would have wanted it. Oh, begging your pardon, miss, but as you know, I was butler and personal servant to your father before you were born. I've been with this family many years, most of my life, in fact.
Whatever this disagreement between you and Mrs. Murchison may be, we'll discuss it another time. At the moment, we must go to the crypt. Fetch a lantern so you can light the way. Well, why do you stand there?
Oh, there'll be no need for me to enter the crypt, I trust.
I don't believe so. Edward?
No. The will merely states that the coffin was to be left open for a week and food and water left nearby.
The master was always afraid of being buried alive. Deathly afraid.
As many are. It's an all too common occurrence. But no, you needn't enter the crypt, Hobbs. Miss Trezillian must do that. And I, as a representative of the law firm of Costin and Loring, must accompany her.
Ah, yes, sir, but when it comes to putting the lid on the coffin and screwing it down...
I'll do that, since it seems to trouble you.
Oh, thank you, sir, and I'll fetch the lantern.
You may go, Mrs. Murchison. We'll discuss this matter later.
Very well, miss. But Hobbs is becoming... He has become impossible. Oh, now, who could that be on such a day as this?
Whoever it may be, let him in out of the storm, Mrs. Murchison.
Yes, Miss Travis.
Thank you, Murchison. Thank you. Frightful day. Soaked to the skin.
Lord Burley, what brings you out on such a day?
Well, all days are good days for business, my dear.
Business? Oh, I apologize. I haven't introduced you. This is Mr. Edward Somerset of Coston and Loring, my father's solicitors.
Never do.
Edward Lord Burley.
How do you do, sir?
You're here on business, you say?
To be exact, to make another offer for Moorland Manor, my dear.
You've chosen a bad time, my lord. Though, really, any time would be bad. As my father told you more than once, I think, Moorland is not for sale.
Wrong tense, my dear. It wasn't for sale, but it is now. Or I happen to know soon will be.
What gives you that idea, Lord Burley?
Excuse me,
Miss... Hobbs has brought the lantern, Edward. Lord Burley will have to excuse us.
Ah, I had forgot. This is the day, and no doubt the time, for paying a visit to the family crypt, eh? Your father had a fear of being buried alive. Well, I'm sure you'll find him dead enough.
May I ask how you happen to be so well acquainted with the private affairs of Moorland Manor? How do you know this is the day we were to visit the crypt?
There's little goes on in Burley, in the county and at the village, sir, that I don't know. Good day to you, sir. And you'll be hearing from me again, Miss Tressilian.
Terrible man.
Oh, certainly is. Well, Margaret, it's time.
Yes.
Hobbs, lead the way. I'll open the door. Give me the lantern, Hobbs, and wait here.
Oh, yes, sir.
Come, Margaret.
Edward, I can't enter that awful place again.
I'm afraid you must. It was your father's wish.
So cold. Damp, so...
Oh. There. There's the open coffin. Let me just shine the lantern inside it. To be sure your father's body is still there. Yes, it is. Look, Margaret.
Yes. The body is there.
Go outside now. I'll put the lid on the coffin and screw it down.
All right. I'll wait for you with Hobbs until you... Edward.
What is it?
There's something strange here. Something... curious... Clothes on the body.
The clothes?
That isn't the suit we buried my father in. In fact, Edward... Oh, good Lord. It isn't my father's body.
Now.
Edward, I tell you, it isn't. You knew my father. He was much taller... He was thin.
By heaven, you're right. But this makes no sense at all. It's his head.
Yes. It is. I'm going to faint.
Outside, quickly. I'll join you.
Miss, what is it, miss?
Something horrible. Horrible.
Oh, what, miss? What?
I don't dare say it, Hobbs. I don't dare think it.
Mr. Somerset, sir... What is it? What is it in there?
The thing in the coffin. It's Sir Simon's head, but not his body.
Not his body?
Someone cut his head off, stole his body, and put another in its place.
Utterly incredible, Somerset.
Dr. Westmore, what I've just told you, I saw with my own eyes. So did Margaret. In fact, she was the one who first noticed it was the wrong body.
Where is she?
Resting. Or perhaps I should say recuperating. It was an awful shock for her.
No doubt. Have you notified the police?
No.
Well, why not, man?
There's only a constable in the village, and I've heard he's anything but competent. I intend to send a message to the London police by coach tomorrow morning.
Well, better still, I'll take it for you.
I'd rather not wait till you leave on Monday.
Oh, I'll not be staying the weekend now. Margaret will be in no mood or condition to discuss our wedding plans. And as a surgeon at London Hospital, I have much to do. No point wasting my time here.
You don't exactly sound like a man in love, Dr. Westmore.
In love?
With Margaret, of course.
But I'm not. Nor is she with me. It's all purely a financial arrangement, you understand.
Well, no. I didn't quite.
Oh, but of course. An arrangement I made with Sir Simon. He was a very ill man for nearly a decade. He sought my rather special services, if I may say so. But as you know, Morland is mortgaged to the hilt, and he was unable to pay.
In return, he offered you his daughter's hand in marriage?
And Morland Manor. Even though the estate is heavily mortgaged, it'll give me a tidy sum. A fortune, in fact, once I sell it. Now, look here, let's go down to the crypt. I want to see for myself.
I'll ring for Harps first. You say you're not in love with Margaret?
Not in the least.
I am.
No. Are you indeed?
And she's in love with me.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know quite how to ask this, except to ask it. Will you release Margaret?
Why, of course not.
Even if... Hobbs.
You rang, sir?
Yes. Dr. Westmore and I want to go down into the crypt. Bring a lantern, will you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and tell Mrs. Murchison she can serve tea in half an hour.
Yes, sir.
As I was saying, Doctor, even if Margaret signed over all right to Morland, to you...
Why should I bargain for what will be mine once we marry?
And if she refuses to marry you?
Well, she won't. Margaret is a woman of honor.
What do you know of honor, Dr. Westmore?
Now, if you mean to insult me, Somerset...
I mean to give you the truth. I've had you investigated, Doctor. Quietly, but thoroughly. I happen to know that you have twice been brought before the Royal College of Surgeons on charges of conduct unbecoming a physician. Charges which could not be proved for lack of evidence.
I was not guilty.
That you are presently under investigation by the same College of Surgeons who this time do have the evidence to revoke your license. And will, Dr. Westmore, because you are considered unworthy of the name doctor and will be barred from medical practice.
You have been thorough, Somerset. Perhaps, under the circumstances, you'd prefer I went down the crypt without your company.
I'd better go with you, since one of the charges against you is that of body snatching. I'll take the lantern, Hobbs. You wait here.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Oh, and you told Mrs. Murchison about tea.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but I couldn't find her about.
What do you mean? She must be somewhere in the house.
No, sir. At least I was unable to find her, and you did want the lantern right away, sir.
No matter. This way, Westmore.
Hmm. Those coffins stacked one on top of another. Their occupants have certainly been dead for years.
Some of them for nearly a century.
Curious. That's Sir Simon's coffin there, the one with the lid off?
Yes. And as you can see, the body isn't that of Sir Simon, but...
Good Lord! What in the name of... Here, raise the lantern. Let's have some more light. You did say the head was Sir Simon's?
It was.
But this is... It's the head of a woman.
Katie.
Katie?
Katie Johnson. The maid.
What's this? Well, it's incredible. First, if I'm to believe you, Sir Simon's body was exchanged for another, and now his head? Is this some sort of a joke?
I don't think so, Westmore. But if it is, it's the joke of someone gone mad. Stark mad.
Baffling mystery, wouldn't you say? You might even call it heady. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Edward Somerset's Daily Journal, recording what took place later on, is even more baffling, and I'm afraid more ghastly. Most of this strange story, the body of it... There I go again. All I meant to say was, there's more to come. And so, I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
The Marines are looking for a
few good men. Men who want to learn good jobs. And today, a qualified man can choose the direction he wants to go in the Marine Corps. Choose the kind of skills he wants to learn. Like computers, aircraft maintenance, or electronics, radio communications, food services, aviation technology. You name it, Marines do it. If you want to learn it, the Marines will teach you skills, responsibility, and leadership in any field you can handle. Remember, qualified men can choose their own directions in the Marine Corps. Skills to learn, careers to build in many directions. The Marines are looking for a few good men who want to choose their own directions, want to learn good jobs, want to be Marines.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems? Your Better Business Bureau knows.
Honey, just look at this fantastic pie I made. This came from a catalog at $47.45. And the manufacturer's list price is $89.95. I can't believe it.
Well, don't believe it. Your $47.45 price is pretty good. Only I've been looking around, and believe me, no one is selling them for list price.
You mean I was taken? I got a bad deal? Gosh, I wonder how I could really find out.
I'll help you.
Who are you?
I'm the man from your Better Business Bureau. You know, catalogs sometimes list two prices for an item. One is the list price, and the other is what you pay. And the only way you can be sure is to shop around.
You are so smart.
Oh, not at all. Your Better Business Bureau is better information for consumers like you.
Shocking things. But I must confess that even I, somewhat of a connoisseur of the shocking, was totally stunned by Edward Somerset's account of what happened following the gruesome discovery that Sir Simon's head had now been replaced by Katie Johnson's. If I was appalled merely in reading about what had taken place, the feelings of those who actually lived through these ghastly events can be imagined.
But where is my father's body, head and body? Whose body is it in the coffin? Who killed Katie Johnson, severed her head from her body, and put it in my father's coffin? What?
Margaret, I beg you, enough. I can't answer even one of your questions, let alone a dozen.
I didn't ask a dozen, Edward.
You needn't snap my head off.
No. We're all somewhat nerved up.
Talk. We sit here talking when we should be doing something.
Perhaps you have a suggestion, my dear Margaret?
At least one murder has been committed in this house. Possibly two. Katie Johnson and whoever's body that is in my father's coffin. Shouldn't we notify the police?
The village constable is worse than useless. Dr. Westmore has offered to take a message to the London police when he leaves in the morning.
You'll not be staying the weekend.
I may soon cease to be a doctor, Margaret. Certainly if the College of Surgeons rescinds my license. But I still retain some remnants of the gentleman. You are certainly in no mood to discuss our wedding plans.
Neither now nor at any other time.
Ah, well. You have no choice there.
Perhaps she does. Or could have, if, as you say, you do retain some gentlemanly qualities.
You refer to the suggestion you made earlier, just before we went down into the crypt.
Yes.
What suggestion?
That Westmore release you from your pledge to marry him in return for Moorland Manor, which, after all, is really what he wants.
Not quite, my dear fellow. Not altogether quite.
What do you mean? If you don't love Margaret...
Love has nothing to do with it. It's a matter of convenience and what is best for me.
I don't understand.
Well, you would if you'd allow me to finish. Once my license to practice medicine is revoked, and it will be this time, I'm sure, I shall go into business. Contacts, important contacts, are vital to business success. And the making of contacts requires a good deal of entertaining. So you see, I shall need a wife to fill the role of hostess.
Does that answer you? Yes, I guess it does.
I beg your pardon, Miss Margaret.
Oh, Hobbs, yes.
You asked me to find out where Mrs. Murchison had got to, and I have, Miss.
Where did you find her?
In the kitchen, sir, where she claimed she'd been all the time. Only she hasn't.
Did you tell her I want to see her?
Yes, Miss, he did. And I came straight along.
Where have you been the past hour?
In the kitchen, Miss. preparing tonight's dinner.
Mrs. Murchison, more than an hour ago, I asked Hobbs to let you know he wanted tea, and he couldn't find you.
Well, I don't know why not, Mr. Somerset. I've been in the kitchen all that time. And as for tea, there was no need to give me an order. Tea is always served in this house at 5.
Then why didn't you serve it?
Too busy getting dinner, miss. I gave Katie instructions to serve it today. She never got to do it. God rest her soul.
Hobbs said he couldn't find you. Not anywhere.
Well, that is a lie. I have been in that kitchen the last 2 hours. Never left it once. He's lying, he is. Trying to get me into trouble.
Oh, come now, Murchison. Why would Hobbs want to get you into trouble?
Because I know too much about him. That's why. And he's afraid I might tell what I know. He wants to see me dismissed.
The woman is mad. Stark mad.
Am I? We have been paid no salary in this house for 6 months. Now, not that I'm complaining, as I'm not. But ask him how he can afford to buy the finest of vintage wines that swill down his gullet. Ask him who pays for the costly cigars he smokes. And ask him where he gets the money for the expensive suits, shoes, whatever he wears when he goes to London on his days off. Ask him.
Is it true, Holmes?
Why, yes, miss. I'll not deny that I enjoy good wine and a fine cigar. How do I pay for them? Why, miss, your father paid me well in the many years I served him. I was able to save considerable. And that, miss, is all there is to it. Though Mrs. Murchison would like you to think otherwise.
Think what?
Well, Mrs. Murchison? Nothing, miss. I've said too much already. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a roast cooking.
1 minute.
Sir?
The inside of your right arm. I just noticed when you turned. It's smeared with what looks like blood.
Blood?
Well, look at it.
Oh. Oh, yes.
Is it blood, Mrs. Murchison?
I
guess it is. Yes, preparing the roast, cutting it, I must have got a smear of blood on me.
Is that how you got it, Mrs. Murchison?
What do you mean, Dr. Westmore?
Nothing. Nothing, Mrs. Murchison.
May I go, miss?
Yes. And you too, Hobbs.
Oh, yes, miss.
Well, she could have got that blood on her from cutting a roast of beef.
Or from cutting something else. My suspicions of Mrs. Murchison were sharply aroused. I had myself stated to Westmore that whoever was responsible for these ghoulish happenings must be mad. Stark mad. I was speculating on all this in the drawing room after dinner, paying little attention to something Margaret and Westmore were discussing, when, to the surprise of us all, Lord Burley was announced for the second time that day.
His lordship, miss.
Good evening, Miss Tressilian. Mr. Somerset, and you, Dr. Westmore.
Good evening.
Lord Burley.
Sir?
I thought our business had ended this afternoon.
Ah, no, my dear. Business, sound business, that is, never takes no for an answer. Since I could not reason with you, I decided to ride over and, if possible, reason with your husband-to-be. To answer your look, Doctor, yes, I heard you were here.
Is there anything you don't know, Lord Burley?
Very little, very little. As your betrothed may have mentioned to you, I'm interested in buying Moorland Manor.
She didn't mention it, no.
Ah, yes. Well, I am prepared to make you, all things considered, a quite decent offer, Doctor. Once you come into possession through marriage, of course. Would you be interested?
I would, indeed. Why do you want Moorland, my lord?
Well, it adjoins my own estate. The 780 acres of Moorland would be a welcome addition.
I should think so, yes. Hmm. What are you prepared to offer?
£1 per acre, £780.
That isn't an offer, Lord Burley. It's an insult.
Oh, not at all, not at all. If you look at it in the right light, Doctor, all things considered, as I said, it's really something of a compliment.
As attorney for the estate, I can assure you it's worth a very great deal more than £780.
Oh, can you, Mr. Somerset? Can you indeed? In your position, you must also be aware that the estate is impoverished.
Yes, but...
That taxes are now a year in arrears.
Yes.
do.
I know, I know. You entertain the hope, the forlorn hope, Mr. Somerset, that through proper management, through improved land production, you might salvage the estate.
I would hope that Dr. Westmore would, when he becomes owner.
Well, hasn't he told you he means to sell more land within a month, perhaps less? You'd be willing to settle for shillings.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, quite simply, my dear, that there will be no one here to run the place for you. No servants, no farmers, no stable help, no one.
Why not?
Because of the strange things taking place here. I refer to the occurrences in the family vault, already known in the village, and the people are frightened. Within a few days, they will shun Moorland Manor as if it contained bubonic plague.
But this is impossible. Well informed as you may be on what goes on in Burley, you couldn't be this informed. Unless...
Yes?
Nothing.
No, I insist. Unless what, my dear?
I said nothing.
But your silence signifies everything. If you're implying that I have a more than ordinary knowledge of what is going on here, that I am in some way involved, then out with it.
That is indeed what I do, Sir Lyons.
Well, then let me assure you that you are wrong. I have my sources of information, yes. I have my informants, indeed a network of them. But I am not, I repeat, not... a body snatcher.
Body snatcher?
Good one, man. What do you think is behind all this?
Body snatching.
Oh, heaven help us. What naivete. Do you think someone is simply playing games, having some sort of ghoulish fun? You, Miss Tressilian, and you, Mr. Somerset, yes, I can understand it with you two. But Westmore, you? Do you mean to say you haven't suggested this possibility, that this probability, to these two young people?
Should I have?
Ah, but better than anyone, the need of bodies for dissection purposes, than for the training of medical students. Medical schools will pay £10 for a fresh body, and 15, as you damn well know, sir, for a fresh head.
Really? You're far more knowledgeable than I am, sir.
Oh, you know nothing of it, eh? You, whose case is on trial this very moment before the College of Surgeons for just such practices, you know nothing?
What is he on trial for? I thought it was body snatching alone.
Oh, that, of course. But in the eyes of the authorities, something far more vile. Dr. Westmore is a grave robber.
What?
Yes, my dear. He not only snatches corpses, but robs them as well.
Is this true?
I own to nothing.
You needn't. Your face says all.
Blast you, Lord Burley. For what you've done to me these past minutes.
I to you? Have you not done it to yourself, sir?
Yes, heaven above help me, yes. But I had hopes, stupidly had hopes, that I might repair the damage I've done others and myself. I dared to hope that with the monies I would receive from the sale of Moorland, I might regain some reputation, some respect, some personal dignity.
I ask your pardon. I had not known you had in you even a spark of decency.
Only a spark. Nevertheless, a spark, which I might have fanned into flame.
And you may still. What I have said has been said within the confines of this house.
No, Lord Burley, it has been said within the confines of this woman's heart. And will echo there till the day she dies.
Ah, well, I am sorry. But now, as to my offer to buy Moorland Manor...
Another time. We'll discuss it another time, if at all.
Then I had best take my leave.
That would be best. And Lord Burley.
My dear.
Don't come back.
The revelation of another side to Dr. Westmore's character, a good side, came as a surprise to both myself and Margaret. Unhappily, this better side of Dr. Westmore, as Margaret and I discovered in a long discussion with him following Burley's departure, by no means influenced him in releasing Margaret from her obligation to marry him. When finally he had retired for the night, Margaret and I sat hopelessly talking of the future.
Edward, I love you so. And the thought of marrying Dr. Westmore, I shudder at it.
I too, my darling. There must be something. Something.
What? What solution have you thought of?
One that only God could arrange, I'm afraid. Westmore's death
Oh, Edward.
Frankly, there have been times when I've been nearly driven to arrange it myself.
You mustn't say such things, Edward. Not even think. 2 in the morning. No wonder we're having such wild thoughts. We're tired. I'll say goodnight to you, my dear. Edward.
What in heaven's name?
Mrs. Murchison.
But where is she? Where are those screams? The crypt.
The crypt?
Not that way. Stay here.
No, I'm coming with you.
Here's the crypt. Don't come in, Margaret.
Listen, Edward.
Madison, what are you doing here in the crypt? What's happened to make you look so...
There. It's Sir Simon's coffin. Go and look. See for yourself.
Good Lord.
Edward, what?
No, don't look, Margaret.
I must. Oh, my God.
When I came to that part of Edward Somerset's journal, I could hardly wait to turn the page to find out what new horror had taken place in the crypt. And a horror it was. A shocking horror, as you'll discover when you turn the page, so to speak, shortly, after I return with Act Three.
You don't see many people putting salt in their beer nowadays. Not that there's anything wrong with salt on radishes or French fries, but man, not in the king of beers. Truth is, the only thing salt can do for Budweiser is make it salty. An unwise thing to do to the only beer in America that's beechwood aged. Unsalted Budweiser has become the most popular beer in the world. That's because in brewing Bud, the Budweiser brewmaster goes all the way for a taste, a smoothness, a drinkability you'll find in no other beer at any price. And something else you can take without a grain of salt. The fact that when you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Hi.
Hi. I'm in nuclear research.
Nuclear research?
Uh-huh.
Hey, wow. I took you for a salami.
I beg your pardon?
A salami salesman, I thought for sure. Nuclear research.
Yeah.
And so young. Doesn't that take years and years of college?
Not necessarily. Well, today you can have a college grad's career with only a year or two of technical education. Look, it's all here in this free book, 25 Technical Careers in 2 Years or Less. It tells you how you can get into programming, chemistry, architecture, community service work, forestry.
Forestry? That would be great for this friend of mine. He loves to play in the woods.
Play in the woods?
Where do you get this free book, 25 Technical Careers?
Just write Careers, Washington, D.C., 20202.
Careers, Washington, D.C., 20202?
Yeah. Send for it. It tells you how you can have a college grad's career without 4 years of college.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
Shall we turn that page of Edward Somerset's journal? Personally, I could scarcely wait to do so. But I am used to horrors. I can sort of take them in my stride. While you, on the other, you insist? Very well, then. We turn the page.
Margaret, for all her delicate beauty, is a strong woman, a woman of courage. But as she looked into her father's coffin, and the words...
Oh, my God!
Escaped her lips. I feared she was about to faint. But she somehow managed to retain control. When I was sure she wasn't about to collapse, I turned my attention to Mrs. Murchison and said, pull yourself together, Mrs. Murchison.
I'll try.
And answer me. What are you doing here in the crypt?
What?
And at this hour of the morning?
I
answer me.
I wanted to clear myself.
Clear yourself?
To prove my innocence. Last night, when you saw the blood smear on my arm, the way you looked at me, all of you, the way you talked, I could see you suspected me of doing these foul things. What brought you here? What could you expect to prove here? I don't know. I only know I couldn't sleep. I tossed and turned, all sorts of thoughts going through my head, all sorts of needs to prove to you that your suspicions of me were unfounded. I came down here in desperation, I suppose, thinking I might find something, some clue, some bit of evidence that would give the lie to Hobbs. Instead, I found that.
What do you mean, give the lie to Hobbs?
Sir, I was in the kitchen all the time he claims he was looking for me. The time when poor Katie was murdered. Oh, and so that blood on my arm was from cutting the roast beef from nothing else.
So you say.
You don't believe me still.
Why should I? We find you here in the crypt under very curious circumstances, and you expect us to believe your not very convincing story?
It's the truth. I swear to you, sir, you miss. It's true.
That's to be seen. The question now is, what's to be done?
Edward, the police must be notified as soon as possible.
Yes. Dr. Westmore was going to take a message to London tomorrow morning. Well, someone else will have to do it now.
Edward?
Yes?
Are we dealing with a madman?
I'd say what's in that coffin answers your question, Margaret. If we had found Dr. Westmore's head, just the head, I might still have some doubts, but not anymore. Not after finding Westmore's head with the lips cut off.
Terrible. Terrible. What happened to Dr. Westmore?
Yes.
Will you, will you be long in London, sir?
Only overnight. I'll return in the morning with, I hope, some member of the police force who can get to the bottom of what's going on at Moorland.
Strange, strange. First Sir Simon's body taken, but his head left in the coffin. Then his head gone and Katie's... Oh, poor girl. Her head put in its place. And now Dr. Westmore's head in place of Katie's and the lips cut off. Horrible. Horrible.
Very.
Have you any idea, sir, as to what's behind this?
I have my suspicions, Hobbs. But that's all they are. Suspicions.
Well, now, you'll be sure to return on the morning coach, and so I'll be there to meet you.
Yes.
Depend on me. And there now, you see, the village just below us in the valley. I told you we'd be in plenty of time.
You've hardly touched your dinner, miss.
I'm not hungry, Mrs. Murchison.
Oh, small wonder. All that's happened here. And some of the village farmhands telling you today that they'd not be coming back to Moorland to work the fields. I'll see who it is, miss. Lord Burley.
Is your mistress at home, Mrs. Murchison?
I'll see, my lord.
No need. I'm sure she is.
I thought I had informed you, Lord Burley, that your presence here is no longer desired.
You may mind about that.
If you come to see me about...
I've come to see the crypt, if I may have your permission.
Whatever for?
I learned today that a good number of your farmhands have left you because of the doings here. Well, for my benefit, once I own Moorland, I think it best to clear up the mystery of the crypt as quickly as may be.
You think you can?
I know I can. Because, you see, I know, on good authority, the reason behind what's been going on.
Is it body snatching?
Yes. So, in any case, I am informed. But I wish to see for myself before taking action. I have your permission.
Very well.
Now, come along, then. Now, first I want to look in the coffin. Ah, poor Westmore. Lips mutilated as I was informed.
Whatever it is you wish to see or do, will you do it quickly?
The
be absolutely sure, I'll open the top coffin on this stack.
No. You can't do that. It's sacrilege. That's the coffin of my mother.
I'm afraid it was the coffin of your mother, my dear. In truth, I'm afraid many of these coffins no longer contain their original occupants. They are now used as storage boxes for much fresher corpses. Now, with your permission, then. Yeah, so, see for yourself, Margaret.
Please, I'd rather not.
Oh, come, come, you must. This once. I want you to know I speak the truth. Look.
But why? If bodies are in such demand, why store them away? Why not sell them at once?
Oh, my dear, you are as devoid of business sense as your father. In business, there is an inexorable law known as the law of supply and demand. When supply exceeds demand, prices fall, and vice versa. There's more demand for corpses at some times than at others, more demand for heads at certain times. At the moment, medical schools are in need of heads. Why, I haven't the vaguest idea. My informant didn't know.
I do!
What? Hobbs, what are you doing here?
No need to answer that, Hobbs. That butcher knife in your hand is answer enough.
Answer enough for you? Damn your rotten soul!
No! 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 Stabbing him to death!
May he rot in hell! Eyes and ears everywhere. Nothing hidden from him. Oh, knew everything. Knew all about what was going on down here. I even knew, I'll be bound, that I am the body snatcher.
You
didn't know. You didn't even suspect. Mr. Somerset did. Lord Burley did. Dr. Westmore, oh, yes, he more than suspected. He knew, because he was the one who bought what I had to sell.
Westmore!
He started me, but I ended him. I had to.
Why did you have to?
He was soon to go on trial before the College of Surgeons. They have enough evidence to convict him, to break him down, and he will have told everything, including where he got the bodies, the heads, from me. Me. That's why I had to cut off his lips, so he'd never tell. Never.
You're mad.
Yes, that may be.
The bodies, the heads. How did you transport them? The nearest medical schools are in London.
I have a carriage. Well, more a wagon in the village. And the night before, I would go to London. On my days off, I would take what I had to sell into the village and stack them away in the wagon. You thought I went to London by coach, yeah? I never did. I always went in my wagon, taking my produce to market to Dr. Westmore.
I never suspected. I never knew.
Well, you do now.
No, don't. Don't kill me, Hobbs. Please, don't kill me.
I must. And cut off your lips so you can't ever...
No, please.
I'll be quick. It won't hurt.
No.
Oh, yes. I've become very... Mr. Somerset. You came back.
I never went. But Hobbs will never know that now. I know, dearest. I heard everything he said. But I knew the whole story before I came back from the village.
You didn't go to London?
I never intended to. The more I thought about it, the more it seemed that if Lord Burley could buy information, and he couldn't have got it any other way, then maybe if I spread the word in the village that I was willing to pay and pay handsomely... Well, in any case, I did. And it worked.
You learned about Hobbs.
Everything.
Thank God you arrived in time.
I thank him not only for that, for the future that lies ahead for us. There are two important tasks I shall devote the rest of my life to. One is restoring Moorland Manor to what it once was.
And the other?
Making you the happiest woman on earth.
And so ended, happily,
the strange and horrifying events at Moorland Manor. Edward Somerset continued his journal for many years, and I'm glad to be able to tell you that he did restore Moorland Manor to its former splendor. And he must have made Margaret at least one of the happiest women on earth, if nine children mean anything. I'll be back shortly.
Buick introduces a new concept for you to consider in light of all the concern about miles per gallon. Range. Range is what you get when you multiply the mileage your car gets per gallon by the number of gallons your car's gas tank holds. Range is one of the things that help make Buick Apollo such a special small car. It comes from coupling the Apollo's economical six-cylinder engine with a standard 21-gallon gas tank. It holds a lot, but it doesn't use a lot. Look into the Apollo. It's the Buick of small cars.
How long would it take you to read a brief three-page pamphlet on drugs? 3 minutes? 4 minutes? Well, not very long. And it would be time well spent. For your free pamphlet, write Drugs, Box 8200, Albany, New York. That's Drugs, Box 8200, Albany, New York.
But don't wait. Time might be running out. This message nationwide, brought to you by the New York State Drug Abuse Control Commission.
Our story took place in 1874. There are many who say the world was a better place to live in then. Maybe it was. I don't know. All of us do face many problems, many frustrations, many fears these days. But one fear we don't have now that just about everyone had then is the fear of being buried alive. At least I don't think we have. Our cast included Suzanne Grossman, Gordon Gould, Ann Petoniak, Ian Martin, Kurt Benson, and George Lothar. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Now, a preview of our next tale.
Wait a moment while I light a candle. All right, Harry.
There.
I can't see a thing. Too dark. Too many shadows. It's a dark diary, Harry. And it has many shadows. Here. Take this candle. Now. Go forward.
Good Lord.
I thought you'd be shocked, Harry.
Shocked?
I'm shattered. Where did you get this? This hideous painting?
Basil Hallward.
Impossible. Basil never painted anything as unholy, ungodly as this.
Well, really, he didn't. I did.
You?
And you.
Dorian, I'm tiring quickly of your veiled answers. What is this thing?
It is a portrait done by Basil Hallward. It is the portrait of Dorian Gray.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Think of next. Cut off his lips, eh? It's 11 o'clock here at KOIN in Portland.
CBS News is next.
CBS News. Senate Republican leaders are going to meet again today to consider whether or not to send a delegation to President Nixon and tell him how their colleagues feel Mr. Nixon should handle the impeachment issue. I'm Ann Crosman, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The leaders met yesterday, and Republican Senator John Tower later told reporters that he believes the majority of Republican senators want Mr. Nixon to resign. Tower said that the senators were very concerned that Mr. Nixon did not understand what Tower called the hazard the president faced if he should be tried by the Senate. Cabinet members meeting with Mr. Nixon on Tuesday said later that he had repeated he would not resign. CBS News White House correspondent Dan Rather takes a look at some of the ramifications of resignation.
If the president continues to insist upon a Senate trial after the Senate votes to remove him from office, Mr. Nixon would receive no pension and could be forced to face civil and criminal charges in the courts. If he resigns, he would receive $60,000 a year pension for life, plus up to $96,000 a year in allowances for staff salaries and office expenses, plus free office space for himself and his staff for the rest of his life. There are differing opinions as to whether Congress can legally pass a special law exempting the president from court prosecution should he agree to resign. Members of the president's staff have explored, at least tentatively, the possibility of getting such a law passed quickly if Mr. Nixon agrees to resign, or having a gentleman's agreement with Congress and Vice President Ford that the president, should he resign, would not be pursued in the courts. The president's Senate friends reportedly have indicated they believe they could get a gentleman's agreement if Mr. Nixon agrees to resign soon. Dan Rather, CBS News, the White House.
The latest from the Mideast in a minute.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication? Or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York.
The Israeli military command announced that Israeli warplanes struck suspected Arab guerrilla targets in southern Lebanon Tuesday night. The targets were about 6 miles inside Lebanon. All Israeli planes reportedly returned safely. The Israeli action follows an incident Tuesday in which 4 Druze villagers were reportedly abducted by some guerrillas who crossed over from Lebanon. An Israeli task force sent into Lebanon to bring back the Druze came under Lebanese army mortar fire and was not able to carry out its mission. The task force did, however, capture 6 Lebanese villagers who they believe were collaborating with the Arab guerrillas. Senator Frank Church, who is chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Multinational Corporations, has released some hitherto secret testimony. It says that the big Aramco oil company in Saudi Arabia conducted an extensive campaign last year through its American officers to get the United States government to change its pro-Israel policy. Church says that Aramco officers were pressured to take such action after Saudi Arabian King Faisal threatened to take over Aramco corporations unless U.S. policy changed. Church explains one of the reasons the officers may have acted as they did.
We have to recognize that American companies who do invest heavily abroad cannot be relied upon to side with the United States in periods of crisis if they feel that their investments in foreign countries are in jeopardy. This is one aspect of the multinational corporation that we all have to take very much to heart.
That was Senator Church. More in a minute.
Hartz Mountain announces the no flea guarantee. We're so sure our flea killing collar kills any flea on your dog or cat, we'll give you an unconditional money back guarantee. If not satisfied, write Hartz, Harrison, New Jersey. The Hartz flea killing collar, the collar with a no flea guarantee.
Get the Hartz flea killing collar immediately. We guarantee you'll never see an itch
magically. We've got to pitch in to clean up America. And if everybody keeps pitching in, we can call on America. America the beautiful, once again.
Oh, how can you pitch in? United States Brewers Association, P.O. Box 2570, Washington, D.C., 20013.
A Canadian member of the United Nations peacekeeping force in Cyprus was reported shot and killed Tuesday night in Nicosia. The Canadian Defense Department says 20-year-old Joseph Perrin was shot after his patrol vehicle was stopped at a checkpoint. The Canadian government says it does not know who shot Perrin. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
I know you're a lonely woman, and I love you. Someone else is waiting, and he owns you. If he should ever wake up, be sure your story is straight up. If you talk in your sleep, don't mention my name. And if you walk in your sleep, forget where you came.